Chapter 13. The three of us headed back to the Silken Shawl to meet up with Nilemay and Bakoth and get the rest of our gear. But as we walked through the city, I was on high alert, and there was a tense knot in my stomach. Felpip had said Ursinger was in the city, and the idea that I was so close to my unseen enemy put me on edge. I was careful to keep my hood up, and I made sure the Galil was well hidden under my cloak. Once we were back at the inn, Nilemay and Bakoth were ready to go and already had the ox loaded up with our extra supplies. Then we slipped out of the northern gate of the city as quietly as we could. Luckily, the guards weren't as worried about people leaving the city as they were about people entering, and we breezed past without much trouble. "We should find a quiet spot in the woods where we can look over the map and make some final plans," I said. "But we still need to get a good look at the outside of the retreat itself. We have the floor plan and a good idea of where it is, but we still don't know what the terrain around it looks like."
"I think it would be safe to guess the trees around the manor itself have been cleared back a ways,"
Bakoth replied with a thoughtful expression.
"And it's supposed to be near a lake, so that might be a possible way of entry onto the grounds, if we can find an unattended fishing boat."
"I kind of like that," I nodded. "We'll be able to come up with a definite plan once we know what we're dealing with." Once we were a little ways from the city, we turned and moved into the woods. There was a woodcutter's or hunting trail we followed until we were deep inside the twisted forest, and then we found a small clearing next to a babbling brook. I pulled out the map and laid it out on a flat boulder as the others gathered around to look at it. "If this were your retreat, where would you put your guards?" I asked Nilemay and Bakoth, since they were both soldiers and military-minded.
"Keep in mind that our information says there is only a skeleton force there at this time,"
Scourge added.
"If it were me,"
Nilemay replied in her calm, measured tone,
"I would have two guards at every entrance, one or two on the roof to watch for intruders from every angle, and at least four to patrol the grounds in pairs."
I counted the outside entrances into the manor house on the map. "There's the main door into the hall and the servants' doors in the kitchens," I said as I thought out loud. "So that's four. Two more on the roof would be six. Then four to walk the grounds would be 10. If we double that for multiple watches, that's 20.
"I would say it's more like 26.
Scourge interjected.
"I've heard there's a wall around the manor house, and there might be one or two more guards in the basement as well. If the Mad Chief does in fact have a secret jail."
"So it could be as many as 30.
Amrila scrunched her eyebrows together as she looked at the map.
"It might be best to try and sneak up as close as we can and quietly take out as many guards as possible before anyone raises the alarm."
"I think so too," I replied as I rubbed my chin and thought. "And I'd rather not kill any servants who are there. The guards and soldiers are one thing. They serve Ursinger knowing what a monster he is. But some maid or butler might just be trying to make a living."
"That's very charitable of you,"
the Zinkari man said in a dry tone. "I imagine serving a clan chief is a pretty desirable job here," I continued. "They might not have anything to do with the fucked up shit Ursinger does."
"We can revisit this argument once we see the inside of this retreat,"
Bakoth said as he waved his hand over the map.
"Once we are inside the manor, how do you want us to go about searching it? What exactly are we looking for?"
"That's a good question," I said, as I looked at the three floors shown on the map. "I think we should clear the first floor as a group, then split up into two teams. Bakoth and Skrello will take the second story, while Amrila, Nilemay, and I will take the basement. Upstairs, you gentlemen should only find more servants, maybe a guard or two. But if there's a jail in the basement, there could be a small regiment of soldiers down there, and I'd like to have both the rifles there to handle that."
"Maybe it would be good for me to go up to the roof to keep a lookout after we've secured the manor,"
Amrila offered.
"If you end up using the rifles as we infiltrate the manor, then it could bring any patrols of soldiers who might be in the woods at the time."
"That's a good point," I nodded. "So you'll do that. As far as what we're looking for, I don't know if we'll be sure until we find it, but we should all keep an eye out for this symbol. I saw it on a pin we found on one of the goblins we fought in the Dolrath territory." I got a pencil out of my backpack and drew the little pyramid with the circles at the end of each point on the edge of the map, like I had seen on the gold pin. As soon as I'd finished drawing it, The dark-skinned Zinkari man hissed, quickly reached over, and tried to rub the mark away.
"You cannot just draw things like that,"
the horned man said with unexpected heat.
"The marks of the demon lords have power in them."
Scourge suddenly stood and moved back from the rock. I could see the man was shaken. "Are you familiar with this symbol?" I asked the Zinkari man.
"I wish I weren't,"
Scourge said with a dark expression. The foppish Zinkari had always seemed outrageous and a little aloof, but I'd never known him to be a coward. Now, as I saw something that hovered on the edge of fear on the dark-skinned man's face, I wondered what it would take to cause that kind of reaction in such an unflappable man.
"So it is the symbol of a demon lord?"
I asked as I stood up and walked over to the black-horned thief. "Do you know which one?"
"I cannot speak his name,"
Scourge said in a quiet but determined voice.
"Just like their symbols, the name of a demon lord has its own special, terrible power."
"That's just superstition,"
Amrilla scoffed.
"No offense, my dear,"
the dark-skinned man shot back with a glance at the horned woman.
"But you grew up in the comfort of the gloom. You do not know what it is like to live in the shadows, near the deeper dark. If Ursinger had his dealings with this demon lord, there's no telling how thin the barrier that keeps him at bay has become."
"All right, Skrello." I placed a friendly hand on his arm and looked the Zinkari man in the eyes. "We can revisit this later. For now, let's worry about finding the evidence we need." I could see the haunted look in the half-demon man's eyes, and I didn't think pushing him would help us much with the task at hand anyway. What we needed to focus on was getting the other tribes to move against the Yeni chief, and hopefully that would head off whatever he was up to with this demon lord. "Once we get to the retreat," I continued as I looked at the whole group, "I think Bakoth and Amrilla should scout ahead and get an idea of the land around the manor house. See if there are any weak points in their security and find the best way in."
"Sounds like a solid plan."
The red-haired man nodded. I rolled up the map and put it back in my backpack. And then I looked around at the forest and the gnarled green and purple trees surrounding us. "Now we just have to find that lake," I said as I stood and dusted myself off. "We'll keep going northeast. If we don't find it in the next couple of hours, we'll cut further west." I thought about the map Ibsith had drawn for me back at the trailer. It wasn't exact by any means, but I knew we couldn't be far off. If we got close enough, we'd be able to follow the sound of water right to it. The group started to move through the woods again, and we picked our way through the underbrush as we watched for exposed tree roots that might trip us up. I found myself beside Scourge, who had fallen into a reflective silence since he'd seen the symbol of the demon lord. "Why do you think Ursinger would keep a prison in his retreat?" I asked, though I'd already guessed at the answer. "Seems like a risky move to me. I mean, if I were trying to be a tyrant, I think I'd avoid making such an obviously tyrannical move."
"It's hard to say what the Mad Chief is thinking at any given time,"
the Zinkari man said as he looked up from his reverie.
"I'm never sure if he's an evil genius or an idiot who lucked into power through inheritance. There have been rumors he keeps political enemies there, but he's also proven time and time again that he's willing to simply kill his detractors publicly."
"Like he killed Ander?" I asked as I thought about the brother Ibsith had never mentioned.
"He killed Ander to clear his path to chiefdom,"
Scourge replied,
"along with several other brothers, some of whom weren't even before him in the line of succession. He killed them just to cement his inheritance."
"Do you think he has anyone there now?" I asked as I pushed a low-hanging vine out of the way. "At the retreat, I mean."
"It's possible,"
the dark-skinned man replied as he stepped over a prickly shrub.
"But if he's not there to enjoy torturing them, it's likely he killed any prisoners before he left the retreat."
"If there's anyone in the prison, I think we should take the time to free them," I said firmly.
"He'll certainly win the hearts and minds of the common folk,"
the Zinkari man snorted. "And it's the right thing to do," I said as I glanced over at the cynical man. "I'm not doing it to win anyone over."
"And that makes you all the more noble, Eddie,"
the dark-skinned man smiled.
"Which might be helpful. This whole vampire of the gloom thing doesn't suit you. I thought you said names were like clothes, and you can just put them on or take them off as needed. I chuckled. Yes, but if something doesn't suit me, I'm not likely to keep it for long. Scourge retorted with a grin. He kept walking through the dense forest, and the sounds of the birds and insects provided a background hum as we talked quietly amongst ourselves. Amrila and Nylame were up ahead, and I couldn't hear what they were talking about, but every now and then one of them would look over their shoulder at me, and something about that made me blush slightly. When we'd been going for an hour straight, though, I heard another sound, like voices nearby, and I could also smell a campfire. Everyone else must have heard it too, because one by one we all stopped and listened intently. It sounded like the low rumble of male voices, and once I stopped moving and focused my attention, I noticed I could smell meat cooking as well. The voices were at a low, conversational tone, and they sounded relaxed. I looked at the others, put a finger to my lips in the universal gesture for silence, and started to sneak toward where I heard the voices coming from. As I snuck forward, Amrila and Bakoth fell in just behind me, and I came up to the edge of a small clearing, just behind some bushes. There were about 15 Yenny soldiers around a fire, where several small game animals were roasting on a spit, and some of the men were tearing chunks off of a loaf of brown bread they passed around.
"Should have stewed him up,"
one dark-haired elf said as he poked at the roasting meat with a stick.
"Not much fat on him. The meat would have been more tender."
"Taste better roasted,"
another soldier replied as he lounged against a tree trunk.
"We get the flavor of the smoke."
"Wish we didn't have to be out here at all."
A younger elf with white hair pouted.
"We could be having lovely hand pies back at the barracks right now."
"We'll be out here until the priestess is found,"
the first elf with dark hair grumbled.
"Until Priestess Ibsith is back with the chief, we'll be stuck combing the woods for signs of her or the vampire."
I watched the soldiers around the fire intently, as I tried to hear every word. We were well hidden, but I knew there could also be other soldiers patrolling a perimeter around their little camp, and I kept my hand close to my galil.
"I think the whole bit with the vampire was made up,"
the youngest soldier scoffed as he stared moodily into the fire.
"Just a way for the chief to save face after he couldn't hold on to his woman."
"You're edging pretty close to treason with that talk, Bilkin,"
the white-haired elf warned.
"You don't want to end up in the jail the chief has in his manor house."
"I hear there's a special room in that manor all made up for Lady Ibsith,"
the dark-haired elf smirked.
"With silks, perfumed pillows, and golden chains. Wouldn't mind having a weekend to ravage her ladyship there. I'd fuck my seed deep into her beautiful mouth and womb. Maybe even a tight arsehole."
"Keep dreaming,"
the white-haired soldier by the tree snorted.
"You'd be lucky to fuck a hog with that natal dick of yours."
An instinct deep inside of me kicked in, and I moved to stand with the galil in my hands. I felt a deep rage, hearing these fuckfaces talk about my wife like that. But then I felt a calm, steady hand touch my shoulder. I looked over my shoulder and saw Bakoth as he tilted his head to the right to let me know he wanted to move away from the camp. But there was something else in his eyes, like a deadly understanding of the rage I felt in that moment. Just over his shoulder, I could also see Amrila crouched behind the bushes, and the horned woman's eyes had gone flat as she stared at the lounging soldiers. I looked back at the Mohawk Dolrath, and we moved some distance back into the woods. Scourge and Nylame hadn't been far away, and I saw they followed us back into the forest. We found a dense thicket of trees and hunkered down, but a curl of white-hot anger was still nestled in the pit of my stomach.
"We will kill them,"
the red-haired elf said in a calm voice as he looked into my eyes. "Aren't we a little close to the city?" I asked as I fought my inner instincts and tried to be reasonable. "We don't want to alert Ursinger's whole army to where we are."
"If it were me, and I heard a man speaking of someone I love that way, I would kill him and all who stood with him,"
Bakoth replied without any emotion. "But you said your wife has a nose like a hog," I retorted with a cocked eyebrow.
"Yes, but she is my wife,"
the Dolrath nodded. "I can say that.
I adore her upturned nose and the fact that she snorts a little when she laughs too hard. But if another man said that about her, I would run him through. It is my right as a husband." "This is why I avoid such entanglements," Scourge sighed as he looked between Bakoth and me.
But if we get to kill any soldiers, and weaken the Mad Chief even a little, then I'm in.
The feeling of rage started to grow inside of me again, and transformed into a sense of righteous indignation.
Eddie, I want to kill them all for talking about my sister that way,
the horned woman said in a flat tone as she toyed with the hilt of her sword. They outnumber us 3-1, I said as I pictured the camp in my head. And we can't use the guns because they're too loud for the situation. So, is there a way to separate them? That way they can't work as a unit.
I'd bet if these pigs heard a woman in distress in the woods, they'd come running.
Nyla chuckled darkly.
Amrila or I could place ourselves a distance from the camp and act as a decoy. They'd likely send a small group first, then the rest of them would come to see what happened when the others don't return.
That's a really good idea. I grinned and then I rubbed my hands together. We'll move back toward them a few yards, hide in a circle around Amrila, and then wait until the first one's within spitting distance before we spring the ambush.
Why do I have to play the damsel in distress?
The Zinkari woman groaned.
You're smaller, less obviously muscled, and not as well known, Scourge said with a frank expression. And you should hide your swords in the bushes next to you, so you won't be visibly armed.
Fine.
The red-skinned woman rolled her eyes. Then the group repositioned a few yards closer to where the Yinni soldiers were still roasting their dinner, which I assumed would be dry as fuck now. Amrila sat on the ground in front of a large tree, hid her swords in the underbrush next to her, and put her hands behind her back, as though they were tied. Scourge posted up behind the tree and took a long, sharp throwing dagger out of his boot, while the rest of us found places in a semicircle where we could conceal ourselves. My wife settled in and waited for all of us to do the same, and once she saw that we were all in position, the Zinkari woman took a deep breath and threw her head back dramatically.
No! Please don't leave me alone!
The horned woman shouted, and then she screamed for good measure before she slumped against the tree and pretended to pass out. The five of us waited in the tense silence that followed. I resisted the urge to shift my weight. On the off chance, the rustling of a stray leaf might give me away. It's weird how you can sit still without any problem when you don't have to think about it, but as soon as you know you can't move, you realize every itch and ache that needs addressing. But I was able to resist, and sat as still as a stone, as we heard voices coming from the direction of the elves' camp. They sounded a little confused at first, but then more cautious as they came near.
It sounded like it came from this direction.
I recognized the voice of the petulant young soldier.
Are you sure we're not just following the echoes?
The white-haired Yinni said as he came into view through the trees.
Oh, shit.
The younger elf stopped and looked at where the Zinkari woman was slumped against the tree.
There she is.
I could see two or three more of the Yinni soldiers come up through the woods behind them.
Hold on,
the white-haired soldier said quietly, and he looked over his shoulder and watched the other soldiers continue on, deeper into the woods.
If we wait to take her back to the captain, we can get the first crack at her.
The disgusting grin on the younger elf's face made my stomach turn as I watched the two start to move toward my wife. I didn't want them any closer to her, so I stood and ran at them. Now, Skrello! I hissed as I approached with my combat knife drawn. The dark-skinned Zinkari popped out from around the tree and expertly threw his dagger, and the long, sharp blade sunk into the white-haired elf's chest before he crumpled to the ground as he made a gurgling noise. At the same time, I leaped toward the younger soldier and speared him in the side before the Yinni could bring his sword around to swing at me. We both hit the ground, and the elf lost his grip on his sword, which fell into the underbrush around us. But with the incredible speed of a trained soldier, the fucker pulled a dagger from his belt before I could pin his arms. The forest around me was suddenly alive with shouts and the clashes of swords as the other soldiers came toward the sound of the fight. The soldier on the ground tried to slice at me with his dagger, but I was able to catch his arm with my free hand as I brought the knife into his side. Then the Yinni's eyes went wide as the blade slid between his ribs.
Shouldn't have talked about raping my wives, you piece of shit,
I snarled as I twisted my knife. The soldier's body stiffened beneath me as a trickle of foamy blood dribbled out of the soldier's mouth, and I rolled him off just as another of Ersinger's men swung his sword and tried to take my head off. I rolled onto my feet and popped up to face the newcomer. This one was broad-shouldered and had a completely shaved head that made his long ears seem all the bigger, and he wielded a curved sword with a serrated tip that he swung at my trunk. I jumped back on my left foot and waited the space of a heartbeat for the bold elf's follow-through on his swing, and once his sword was pointed away from me, I rushed forward again to close the gap between us. The skinhead elf only had an advantage if he could keep me at distance, but up close, I had the upper hand with my shorter blade. I slashed at the innie's face, but he brought his arm up in time for my combat knife to cut through his forearm instead. Then, the elf soldier tried to take another wild swing at me, but I ducked, and as I came back up, I shoved the blade of my knife deep into his stomach and jerked my arm. The combat knife tore a hole in the bald elf's center, and his entrails began to spill out of the wound as I moved out of the way of the gore. The bald fucker dropped his sword as he tried to keep his guts from spilling out of his body, but I was already on to the next soldiers I could find. As I looked around, I could see more of Ursinger's men as they ran toward us through the forest, but I was more worried about the two fighting Amrila. Scourge was able to dance in and out of combat with an inhuman ease and grace as he sliced and cut chunks out of various enemy soldiers who were locked in combat with Bakoth and Nylame. And the two Dolrath warriors were hardened fighters, so I wasn't too concerned for them. As I came up behind one of the men that the Zinkari woman held back with her dual swords, I quickly wrapped one arm around his throat, cranked his head back, and slid his throat from one side to the other. The man's legs gave way, and I let him crumple into a heap at my feet as the horned woman spun and slashed the other soldier from his shoulder to his hip. My blood felt like it was on fire as I turned and looked for my next enemy, and then three soldiers came out of the trees and skidded to a halt as they saw the carnage we had brought down on their companions. The closest one tried to turn on his heels and run back toward the camp, but I recognized his long dark hair, and I wasn't about to let him go after what he'd said about Ibsith. I ran at full speed through the undergrowth and tackled him as Nylame and Bakoth came from behind me to take on the other two soldiers. The dark-haired soldier and I hit the ground, and I quickly righted myself as the other man tried to wriggle away. Then I drove my blade into the base of his skull. There was a loud crunch that made my stomach churn as the combat knife went through the black-haired soldier's spine and severed his spinal cord, and he stopped struggling beneath me in an instant and went still. I looked up just in time to see Nylame run through the soldier she fought, and Bakoth wiped the blade of his sword and looked around for any other enemies to fight.
"Did we get them all?"
the Zinkari man asked as he started to count the bodies on the ground.
"Ursinger really needs to train his men better."
"Or let some of the women fight,"
the Dolrath princess laughed.
"They couldn't be any worse at it than these sons of bitches."
The five of us took a moment to gather up the bodies and pile some loose branches and leaves on them, so they weren't too obvious. But there were 15 dead bodies there, and that was how many I'd remembered seeing around the campfire. None of them had gotten away.
"Should we cut west now?"
the hawk-nosed elf asked as he examined the stream.
"I think it would be a safe guess that this is a runoff from the lake. If we follow it upstream, we should find the retreat without difficulty."
"Yeah," I nodded, but my blood was still boiling from hearing the way the soldiers spoke about Ibsith and what her half-brother had planned for her. "That's a good idea."
"Are you all right?"
Nylame asked in her cool voice.
"We can take a moment if you need it."
"Nah," I said as I readjusted the strap of my galil under the cloak. "I shouldn't have let it get to me like that."
"I like how mad you get when your women are spoken of with such disrespect,"
Nylame said as her eyes met mine.
"It shows you're a true man."
"For what it's worth,"
Bakoth offered,
"if the Mad Chief has his men patrolling these woods and all over the Innie territory, it's a clear indication he has no idea where you have the princess, and he's exhausting his resources looking."
"That's a really good point," I replied as I looked over at the man with the red mohawk. "It's actually really good to know that. Let's follow this stream and see if we can find the lake we're looking for." We followed the stream for a few miles, while still watching for stray patrols of soldiers as we walked along. Then, I could hear a strange sound, almost like a sigh in the distance. It took me a minute to recognize the sound of waves lapping against the shore, since it wasn't something I'd expected to hear in the gloom. As we finally came to the edge of the forest, I saw the rocky shore of a massive underground lake. It wasn't as large as Lake Erie, since I could see the other side was faintly illuminated by moss, but it was easily twice the size of any other lake I'd seen in the subterranean world. I guessed it was a few miles wide at the point where I was looking, but it was hard to judge the exact distance since I wasn't used to estimating how big lakes were in the gloom. The body of water was big enough to generate small waves at least, and I could feel a slight breeze coming off the surface. I wondered if it was caused by the temperature difference between the air and the water, but it was incredible to behold. The shoreline was a pebbled beach, and the water itself was crystal clear and didn't have that weird fishy smell I associated with Lake Erie. As I looked across the way, I saw a large white manor with a wall around it that reached to the edge of the lake, and a small dock with an elaborate pleasure boat docked next to it. Intricate swirling designs were carved on the sides, and the boat was painted in garish shades of reds and greens. There was no sail, but the boat had holes along the side that looked like they held a dozen or so oars. The manor house itself looked like it was two stories, and there were at least two outbuildings from what I could see from the opposite shore. The whole thing, including the tall wall around the manor, looked like they were made from a white stone of some kind. "I'm going to take a wild guess and say that's what we're looking for," I said to the group as we stood just inside the tree line so no one from the manor house could see us. "Let's get a better look." I kneeled down and rummaged through my backpack for a moment until I brought out the binoculars and the bag of silicone earplugs. First, I handed the earplugs to Scourge, who opened the bag and handed two to Bacoth, and then I lifted the binoculars to my eyes and stared at the manor.
"What are these?"
the hawk-faced Dolrath asked from behind me.
"They go in your ears," Scourge explained. "Eddie's favorite toy is quite loud, and these will protect your ears from going deaf when he fires. They're also a delight to squish between your fingers. I find it somehow soothing."
I suppressed a snort of laughter as I looked along the shoreline, the stone walls, and on the roof of the manor. I counted at least 5 guards from where I crouched, but I knew there would be plenty more. "So, how are we going to get in there?" I asked the group. Because we were underground, waiting for the cover of night wasn't an option.
"If we wait for the mist,"
Nidlame replied as she looked over the lake,
"we might be able to use Bacoth's idea of commandeering a fisherman's boat and approaching over the water. But I imagine that's when they will be on the highest alert during the day."
"The mist?" I repeated. But sure enough, when I looked at the center of the lake, a foggy patch was forming. There must be small temperature changes throughout the day down here that caused that, which explained partly how the plants survived down here without rain. "All right," I said as I put away the binoculars and stood. "Let's go steal a fishing boat."